What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to episode number 563 of the Smart Out Moments Smack Talk Podcast Hot Tags of the Week. Let's break down all the stuff that we feel like talking about that happened in the world of pro wrestling this week. I am Tony Mango. I've got with me Robert DeFelice.
Hello, everyone.
And Callum Wiggins.
I'm here this time.
Stick to. We are going to be talking a lot about NXT in particular on this episode, but we got some other things to talk about, like the PWI 500 for 2022. We've got an injury that happened during the NXT thing, but that is an injury. We got a name change. We've got so the trademark stuff for anybody that's out there like, woo, trademarks. Speculation about somebody going into the Hall of Fame and some other TV recap and whatever else we decide to toss in there. These guys might remind me of something that happened that I forgot to add to this list or something, or we might just go on tangents. You know how it goes by now. There's been over 560 episodes of these. So as we go along and we tell you what we think, we want to know what you have to say as well. Drop a comment below on YouTube. And if you're over there on YouTube, hit that like button. That'll help us out quite a bit. Hit that share button if you want to pass this around to somebody that you think might be interested in checking us out. Make sure that you are subscribed to the channel. Ring that notification bell as well to get those email alerts. And if you want to help us out on the monetary side of things, just to get that out of the way and mention it now, there's also a little thanks button that you can see. And that is something to just donate like a tip jar, essentially. But if you want to click the join button that is over there on YouTube, then that will give you access to the channel membership content, like the Dark Cast tier and the Pick Your Poison tier. They're exactly the same thing as the Patreon, the only difference being that it comes out of that kind of payment scale. So if you like one or the other, then go for that. And the other difference being that on Patreon, you don't get access to video content. So when we do things that is better off for you to see what we're doing on screen, you know, maybe we're doing like some kind of a list-based thing or something like that, then you are better off with the YouTube channel membership than you are on Patreon. If you are totally fine with audio-only content, Patreon is the way to go then if you want that. But anything that you guys do is greatly appreciated. It all helps out with a mango tree. It's all funneling in the same place. And the same thing goes to the merchandise shops on Redbubble and TeePublic. If you want to pick up a t-shirt or stickers or some kind of laptop sleeve or something, tons of designs, tons of different products on those two sites. So consider picking something up there if you're interested. So got that out of the way. Let's talk about our hot tags of the week. Before we get into the NXT stuff, because I think that the NXT block is like huge and we're just going to kind of bounce around a lot there. Let's talk about the PWI 500 list that is going out there. We don't know the full list at this point, but we do know the top 20 that's been released. And as per usual, when it comes to any of these lists that are pretty subjective and opinion-based, and you can see this with anything from movie rankings where people are like, you know, oh, you gave that a 4.5 star, and I think it's a 4.75 star movie or whatever. You're always going to have controversy and people disagreeing. So that's what a lot of the discussion becomes. This is the list, and then everybody bitches and complains. But the top 20 that we have going on here, going from 20 down to number 1, and we'll bounce around and talk about these people. 20 is Drew McIntyre. 19 is Kenny Omega. 18 is Adam Cole. 17 is Seth Rollins. 16 is MJF. Continuing down the list, we're just going to, I don't have to say 15 is whatever. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Josh Alexander, Matt Cardona, John Moxley, Shingo Takagi, Jonathan Gresham, Big E, Alijo del Vikingo. Vikingo? How do you pronounce it?
You did it about as good as you're going to. I think we could do it well.
The AAA Mega Champion. You got Bryan Danielson at number 7, Cody Rhodes, Bobby Lashley with the United States title coming in at number 5, Adam Page is number 4, CM Punk is number 3, number 2 is Kazuchika Okada, number 1 is the undisputed WWE Universal Champion, the Tribal Chief himself, Roman Reigns. So, of course, the usual discourse comes out. People complaining that Roman Reigns shouldn't be number 1 because, this person's got a better match and this is whatever, not realizing that the PWI 500 takes into account kayfabe. How do you guys feel about this list? You think Roman Reigns should be number 1? You think it should be someone else?
I will just say Roman Reigns should absolutely be number 1. You don't make it through 2 WrestleManias with the top championship and the top promotion and not get ranked number one on what is essentially a kayfabe ranking list of all of wrestling. I think the biggest gripe that a lot of people had was that Moxley didn't crack the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, honestly, I don't know what the criteria is. I know that they say a certain time frame, but that time frame just doesn't make any sense because you've got like E
right.
all the way at number 9. And like, I love E, but number 9, I would swap E for Moxley. And I think we'd be okay because I think Moxley should be in the top 10 with the 2022 he's had.
Without knowing the full range of where they're basing this on, I think, I don't remember for sure, and Callum, you might know better about this than I think that it's kind of from like June to July or something, right?
It goes from, I believe, the end of July, the start of August last year, I think, to the end of July. It's either that or it's the end of June, start of July, that type of thing. So I know it's middle of the year.
It's like basically SummerSlam, the SummerSlam that they tend to do.
Which in which case it does actually make sense that Big E is as high up as he is because he was WWE champion for essentially the first portion of that period up until the start of 2022. So he was like world champion. That's why he got Bobby Lashley so high up there. Admittedly, Brock Lesnar was also champion twice in that period of time, and he's nowhere near.
If I was going to be a fool and make just like a stink of a certain thing, it would be Brock Lesnar's omission. They tried to say that he didn't have enough matches, but I think that's ridiculous when you talk about the fact that in that time frame, he's returned, headlined
like multiple times,
7 pay-per-views, won the title twice, you know, won the Royal Rumble. I think Brock Lesnar should be on this list, but whatever, like it's a silly kayfabe list.
Also, if we're going across like how many matches they won. How many matches did Roman Reigns have this year?
Mm-hmm.
How many matches did MJF have this year?
For that matter, how many matches did Cody Rhodes have?
Or Kenny Omega, to the point where, because he got injured he went on hiatus in November and didn't come back until after the closing period.
Mm-hmm.
So he was world champion at AEW for those 3 months up to that point. And I guess that's why he's low down, still in the top 20, but it does seem, again, kayfabe being what it is, you are going to weight the world champions more, which is why Roman Reigns is high up there, Okada's high up there. Punk is interesting because Punk was world champion for about, well, technically from May until
Punk has two world title reigns and did nothing with it.
Yeah, technically May until August, but he was only active for about a week of that time.
Yeah, so that I think that he is way higher up than he should be.
Yeah, Paige probably should be higher up, or could be higher up. Lashley could potentially, be. Cody doesn't merit 6th place. I think his positioning up there is due to the stir that he caused when he left AEW for WWE. Because in terms of actual professional wrestling accolades, he only won the TNT Championship in that period of time. Bryan Danielson didn't win any championships in that time.
Right. I would put Rhodes over Danielson, the way that they have him. I'd definitely put Punk down lower.
Yeah, I would have a lot of people at, like just in the place of a lot of these people. Like you have, like technically Big E was a world champion. Jonathan Gresham was a world champion of a promotion that died while he was the champion. So that, and then came back and then he left promptly. I believe Shingo Takagi was champion at one point for New Japan. Moxley was interim champion right towards the end of the thing, and he was also like very prominently featured for AEW. So you got Cardona, who basically reinvented himself. He was NWA champion. Josh Alexander was Impact champion for all that time. I think there's a few names where you just like kind of balk a little bit about how low down they are. I think Moose is surprisingly low considering how long he was Impact champion.
Well, where is Moose on this list?
21st.
Oh, you figured out what 21.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at the whole list. I've got the whole 500 in front of me. Will Ospreay at 27 is a bit of a travesty, considering that he's one place below Bron Breakker.
Well, wasn't he injured for some portion of this time?
Yeah, he suffered a he was injured at the start of the year, but he also headlined Wrestle Kingdom with against Okada to like do the like he I think he entered his injury while he was still New Japan champion.
Okay, I see the full 100 500 list now.
Yeah,
so I thought that only the 20 was released.
Yeah, he entered that while he was still New Japan champion. He then also fought Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. He finished runner-up. Well, I guess the G1 doesn't count because it was after that point. But and also he wrestled for multiple different promotions. He's the British heavyweight champion for Rev Pro. He's now the United States champion for New Japan. So I think him being that low is a bit rich. I think it's interesting that Sammy Guevara's at 28 and Scorpio Sky's at 38 when they basically just traded the TNT championship for quite a while. You can make small quibbles over everything. I think if you're just going for a pure kayfabe perspective, you're just going for longevity of title reigns, then yeah, Roman Reigns should definitely be number one. But I think that they weight things a little bit more about what will make headlines more than what will be the... Because at the end of the day, they are just a...
It's magazine.
Magazine. Yeah. So that's what they're doing to make headlines, and they've put some people up there that are more likely to grab headlines and throwing in people like El Hijo del Vikingo, which makes sense because AAA is the biggest promotion in Mexico right now, so the likelihood is... And he's been doing really good stuff. By all accounts, again, I'm watching him closely, but like any suggestion I've heard of him is saying that he's really good. And they put Jonathan Gresham in there to probably earn some brownie points. But yeah, the biggest issue is that Moxley's not in the top 10, and Moxley should be in the top 10.
I think it's funny that when you look at the very, very bottom of the list to try to figure out who has like the biggest platform and is ranked the lowest, somebody like a Bear Bronson is 491. Now, yeah, I'm not expecting him to be in, you know, the top 50 or something, but just above him, 490 is Reggie. 489 is Isaiah Cassidy.
Here's an interesting one. Ziggler is 285. And he's like below Sonny Kiss. He's below some indie people like Billy Dixon, who I believe retired this year. A lot of names that most of us wouldn't know. And I think that that's...
Evil Uno is 481. Angelo Dawkins is 478. Dawkins is lower than... I don't even know these people. Ron Hunt, Nino Hamburguesa, Arya Daivari. I mean, I know him, but like... Really, you put Daivari above Dawkins? Anthony Green is above him. All these people.
I think the more interesting thing about that is that Montez Ford is not in the top 500.
He's not at all?
No.
That is ridiculous.
I just did a search for Montez on the... I just did a
control. How do you do Dawkins, but you don't do Montez?
Montez Ford's not on here, but Von Wagner is. Yeah, okay. This list, there's some issues here and there.
That's why this list typically gets the reaction it does.
Hey, Jimmy Lloyd's 415. Oh, right underneath JTG. So JTG is like 65 points above Angelo Dawkins and, you know, 90 above where Montez Ford could have been.
I was just scrolling down a little bit as well. Oh, well, look at this. Anthony Ogogo is 233. So that's funny as well. So that's
good. Like, I don't think Ogogo should be ranked higher than someone like Ziggler, even if I understand why. Like, but I think that's ridiculous.
And I just saw an interesting inclusion as well. Max the Impaler at 229. Which is interesting because... Presumably, as a non-binary wrestler, she qualified. They qualify as a both for the male and female list.
Right, and the interesting thing about this list is it's not exclusively male. You know, so you do have like Billy.
Oh, you have Willow. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So I think you have Willow Nightingale at 208.
But I do assume that, you know, Max being non-binary will qualify for the women's list when they released the PBI Women's 100.
It just seems odd that, like, why aren't women higher ranked then? I guess it's limited to women that wrestle men.
Maybe that's what they do. Because
you have like Jordan Grace on here, and Jordan Grace was at one point in that past year the digital champion for Impact, which is a
is that what it is?
Yeah, which it's obviously like a mixed gender belt. Because otherwise you'd have like Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch. Yeah, but they don't wrestle men, or they haven't won any men's belts or anything like that. Whereas I presume Max the Impaler and Willow Nightingale and Jordan Grace have won men's championships, or at least competed for them.
I just think that these kind of lists, when you get to like 500 people, there's no way of really ranking everybody. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in it. I know that obviously if I were a wrestler and if I were double checking to see what my ranking would be, I would put a lot more into it. But that's the type of thing that, in my mind, if you fully disagree with it and you think that you've got a better 500, put your list out there. It's easy. All you got to do is have a Twitter account or post on Facebook or make your own website or make your own YouTube video or your own podcast. Or, you know, if I wanted to do it, you could see it on Smart Cut Moment. I'm certainly not doing it because I don't have the time for that. And I don't know who, you know, 400 of these 500 people are, basically. But, yeah, I could do it for like WWE and AEW or whatever if I really wanted to. And you would see a completely different list for some people. But Roman Reigns would probably be number one for me just because that's what makes sense in my mind.
It's his year.
Yeah. It's cool to see somebody like a Bobby Lashley get so high, especially since he's doing even better stuff now. And curious who we end up seeing next year. Jon Moxley, I'm assuming, definitely will be higher up. I'm assuming probably MJF will be higher up. And we could see some other people make that kind of climb and some other people fall down the list a little bit. Maybe Kevin Owens is going to be higher than 36. Although, arguably with the whole Steve Austin thing, maybe he should have been higher than anyway. I don't know. But if you want to check out the PWI 500, you can pick up your subscription or order from whatever, I don't know, and check, just Google it, you know where you can find those things.
I like that you tried to plug them and
then
just completely gave up a few seconds in.
Yeah, because you know it's not my job to plug them. If they want to have an advertisement on here, they can hit me up. Let's talk about this rumor that's going around now. It's at least by The Sun. And maybe some other outlets will kind of confirm or deny this being a thing, but supposedly, take it with a grain of salt, Stephanie McMahon is pulling for Vince McMahon to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame next year at WrestleMania. I think that, honestly, it would be a better idea if they waited until WrestleMania 40. They haven't announced anybody yet for this upcoming Hall of Fame, but I'm assuming Batista will end up being in there because it's Hollywood and he was announced for the previous class in 2020 and then they didn't get around to it and everything. So it makes sense for Batista to be the headliner in my mind. I don't think that they're going to go with The Rock, but I think that The Rock is, it's either The Rock goes in Hollywood or he goes in the next time that they're in Florida. I think that that makes sense. But
I would just put him in Hollywood. Rock owns Hollywood. I could see Rock and Batista, you know, as a solid 1-2 punch for Hall of Fame in terms of headliners. I don't think Vince is going in this year. I believe this was from the Sun. I just don't see it.
I don't think so either. I think that they are going to be better off if they wait a little bit longer. And it's 40 coming up. That's like, you know, that's a big deal. You could do it then.
For that matter, I don't think that Vince is going to appear at WrestleMania. I think, you know, give it some time to breathe. And then by next year, you know, more people will be willing to see him. Right now, people are probably most excited for a Vince McMahon free WrestleMania in every possible way. Also, I liked his send off this year. He got stunned by Austin, which is the best thing the character ever did.
What do you think, Callum? Are you pro, against? You got a favorite year? You think it would make more sense if you are pro?
I mean, it's a fake wrestling Hall of Fame, so I'm not really super keen one way or the other. But I think they should wait until he's dead. to induct him.
I mean,
and I know, say that sounds a bit like callous or whatever, but he's a super. I think that's what he wants, and I think he's a super controversial figure who's just going to attract a negative response if he. Well, I know that he has his sheep that will bow to him no matter what he does. He could murder a child in front of them, and they still bow his head, bow their heads in reverence towards him, because they gave him the attitude error, and so they love him forever. But I think that he should not go in while he still has the capacity to give a speech or anything like that. And it's not even just due to the fact that he's not exactly coherent these days. I just think that. It's going to be it's going to be really awkward because everyone knows all this stuff that's come forward, and everyone knew a lot of stuff about him already, but now it's just so in the atmosphere. So if he does go in, I don't think it would be for a good number of years anyway, probably at the point where he's too old to really do anything, or is, I don't know, like in his 80s or something like that, by that point. And then he can just come in and say a couple of words, wave at the crowd, and they can give him like a show of respect, because it's like, okay, he's probably going to, you know, don't want to say it too callously, but he's probably going to pass away soon. So let's not just, you know, not just go any further in, not lay any further into it.
I think, of course, again, realistically, a good portion of whether or not they could do something like this depends on what the investigations come out to. If things get worse, then that dramatically goes down. If there ends up being some sort of exoneration in some way, or, you know, well, the public discourse ends up being like, all right, well, maybe that's not necessarily going to be what we focus on. You know, let's put it this way. If it gets swept under the rug, because that happens plenty of times, then maybe by the time that April comes around, they might be more willing to do that and just be like, look, we moved on and that's the end of it. But I still think that WrestleMania 40 is better.
I kind of think that logically they'll go with what Callum said, so waiting until he's gone so that they can all just be giant, huge praise of him, and you don't have to hear him potentially put his foot in his mouth. You know, I think that's probably the best way to go. I do think that they missed an opportunity. Yes, the wounds were fresh, but when he retired and they were in the garden like the next day or whatever, I think that would have been the time to be like, hey, here's a Vince video package, and now we don't talk about it again. Gone.
I guess we'll see over the coming months what happens with that. What do you guys say we get into this NXT talk? Because there's a lot to unpack. One of them being that we had the, as far as TV recap stuff goes, the 1 year anniversary of NXT 2.0 this past Tuesday, which saw some interesting things here and there. Pretty Deadly retained the NXT tag team titles in a steel cage match over the Creed Brothers. A little bit of interference by Damon Kemp. We got some stuff with Fallon Henley kind of backing up when Brooks Jensen hit on Mandy Rose, leading to that little bit of a skirmish going on, and Toxic Attraction having some issues again, and Alba Fire getting into that. We'll talk about how that's all, where that's leading in the future. Quincy Elliott made his debut. What do you guys think about Quincy Elliott? Don't jump at once.
I don't have enough to say about it, really, one way or the other. Like, he's an interesting character. He's got a fair amount of charisma to him. But only time will tell whether he has the ring acumen to back it up.
I'm of the opinion that, like, with certain characters, you might not need a ton of in-ring acumen. And I think that as long as they handle it well, it could be a nice character, a nice image of representation. Quite honestly, Death had said a long time ago that they were going to have
Who had said LGBT? What?
How can you? Am I?
You're sounding kind of low on my end.
Now, hold on. Sorry about that.
Kind of like it sounded like you said Jeff had said.
Stephanie.
Oh, Steph. Okay.
had said that they were going to integrate LGBT characters like 6 years ago, and this is like the first, you know, slight hint of something representing that world. I know, obviously, Sonya is out, but even then, when they seemed primed to do a storyline with her putting a spotlight on that, they didn't. So I'm interested to see where they go with Quincy and what they feel comfortable doing, what he feels comfortable doing, and how you can, you know, introduce that character to the audience, because we're 25 years removed from Goldust, and you can't do the things that you were doing and saying about Goldust anymore.
That's one of my criticisms, is I'm not opposed to this character. Like, some people just militantly would be opposed to this because of their feelings on other issues and everything, and I think that that's unfair and kind of stupid.
That's homophobic as fuck, but okay.
Yeah, like, it's just some people would be like, I don't like this because, you know. I'm not opposed to that. I just don't think that I've so far enjoyed the presentation. I feel very much like, okay, it's Velveteen Dream plus Goldust, and neither of them have the best track record with that, and I don't think that it's, like, taking something and then improving on the formula. I think it's in some ways doing a worse version of it, so I kind of equate it to, like, this is less of an NXT leading up to the main roster developmental act and more of something that I can picture being on the indies, where somebody's like, I'm making a parody of those types of characters. Like, when you see somebody who is basically a Cactus Jack or essentially an Undertaker or whatever it might be. Oh, I'm going to call myself the hot boy Michael McShawn, and you're like, okay, I fucking get it, you know. So far I'm not sold on Quincy Elliott, but I've not been sold on other acts before that have won me over, so it's only been 1 week of in-ring performance and a couple weeks of promos. Maybe in 2 weeks, maybe in 3 months, maybe in 2 years, maybe I end up changing my opinion. I don't know, gotta give them some time. But I'm so far, you know, there's been other people in the past that the first episode I saw them, like a Kevin Owens. First time I saw Kevin Owens, I'm like, yep, give him the belt. Already love him. Not feeling that way for Quincy yet. We'll see. I liked this little bit that we got with Tony D'Angelo and Channing Stacks Lorenzo. We're up against Cameron Grimes, and he had no tag team partner, so Joe Gacy came out. I'm like, you know what? That's logical. Gacy wants to win over Cameron Grimes. So he comes out, he helps him, they win the match, he wins it for him, and Grimes, of course, is like, you know, nah, I didn't ask for your help and everything, and then they lay him out, because it's like, motherfucker, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. I thought that was good storytelling. Thumbs up on that one for me. And it seems like it would be logically leading towards Joe Gacy against Cameron Grimes at Halloween Havoc. I don't know if I'm super into that, but...
the next place they go.
Well, that's pretty much confirmed at this point. Halloween Havoc is October 22nd.
I think there will be more to do with this new person in the red hoodie. I don't know who they're going to be, but they're clearly getting a fourth person for the schism. So they'll probably help Gacy beat Grimes, but this is good. I think a lot of people are actually super into Gacy, which kind of fucks up the dynamic, because the crowd shouldn't be telling the babyface, yeah, hug the cult leader, he helped you. But, like, I enjoyed it.
I've got a theory on that hooded person. I think it's Isla Dawn.
I'm all right with it.
If you look at the people that aren't doing something right now, unless they're repackaging somebody like Erica Yan, or I don't know, like Aaliyah James, maybe, or someone. I mean, maybe Asia Valkyrie, but I think that she's probably still injured. I think Isla Dawn makes the most sense. And we haven't heard anything about her being released. So, you know, I'm going to go more in her direction than for them to change up Brooklyn Barlow or, you know, certainly not going to just change up Tiffany Stratton at this point. Are you feeling anything positive or negative about this Gacy and Grimes feud, Callum? Or is one of those, I don't really care kind of things?
Well, yeah, but it's just fine. Like, it's a logical story. That's kind of what Triple H does.
Yeah. Seems like we do have a tag team with Ariana Grace and Kiana James, but they lost, so maybe they're not going to be a great tag team going forward. We got the quote-unquote in-ring debut, despite the fact that he's been on Level Up, but that doesn't really count because it's almost non-canon, essentially, in air quotes. Hank Walker, security guard, beating Javier Bernal, and then they did a whole thing afterward where HBK gave him a contract, and it's like, oh, look at that, the security guard gets that. I like that they are doing this. I've said for a long time, why don't they ever have the security guards just beat the shit out of somebody and make it a story where the guy's like, hey, that security guard put his fingers on me and he shouldn't have, and then that becomes a roster member and all that. It makes sense. They're big guys.
The only thing I don't like is that they had him on Level Up. Yes, no one watches Level Up, but still.
It would have been better if he didn't wrestle at all, yeah. I think it's cool.
Also, like, Wade Barrett and Vic Joseph, because Barrett's running him down, being a security guard, and Joseph just goes, everybody does security. You did security. Triple H and Shawn Michaels beat you and another fella up when we were in the UK in 2006. I thought that was funny.
I didn't catch that.
They have very good chemistry, Vic and Wade.
They do. They're one of the better teams that they've got going on. I'm not super impressed yet with Hank Walker either, for anybody who's wondering, you know, quick thoughts on that. But again, maybe in a couple weeks, maybe he's improved, maybe he shows more. Right now, they're doing a very basic introduction with him, and it's even part of the gimmick, essentially, that he doesn't really know how to wrestle. So that's something that you know, take it with a grain of salt, too, of like, let's see how that progresses and everything. But I like the gimmick, at least. I think that's fun. And I think that was just one of those like solid things that happened on that episode. Very confused about the last thing that happened on this. So Wesley had been chosen as the person to get the NXT North American Championship title shot against Carmelo Hayes. And he gets attacked, laid out. He's not going to actually have that match. And instead, Solo Sikoa comes out. He beats Hayes. He wins the North American title. So your heel guy that moved up to SmackDown that just recently screwed over Drew McIntyre comes to NXT, gets a big babyface pop to carry on his feud with Carmelo Hayes and the whole, I said I was going to get the next title shot thing, which was completely ignored, basically. And now the North American champion from NXT is on SmackDown. And Wesley is not in the picture despite getting the win of that. I don't know.
I think this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
From a business perspective, gives exposure to NXT on SmackDown. If you're trying to build up NXT, this is exactly what you should be doing.
As a potential third brand, you know, with the, you know, the rebranding. But I think this makes sense.
Yeah, it's not developmental anymore. It's only developmental when Triple H thinks it's convenient to call them developmental.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet, but I'm assuming that's where we're going back to. Solo Sikoa should have been NXT North American champion a while ago. I wonder, honestly, if they were waiting for him to join the Bloodline just so they could go, see, we all have gold. See? And he got to pay off the whole, I got next. So now it's just another cool wrinkle in the story. He could always lose it to someone on the NXT roster, but he could also lose it to Ricochet on SmackDown, and then Ricochet can go over to NXT. I like it.
Where do you guys think that Wesley comes in?
Okay. Oh, he'll just fight.
Just the definitive. Who the fuck cares?
Because I would think that you would need to come back to this. You set up the idea that
you will the fans get to vote. Hold on.
Tony, who lowered that briefcase for Stone Cold? Who raised that briefcase for Stone Cold Steve Austin all those years ago?
Yeah, I mean, back to that. If we go with the idea of, like, fuck you, who cares for all those things, then we could do it with everything. I'm trying to go with idea that they're going to, look, the fans voted for him, so let's try to do something.
It will go back to it.
Okay, so in a couple of weeks, he gets a one-off match with Cyrus Carter and loses. Then it's over.
Probably. Oh, I could see him wanting to take out Melo, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, he got attacked by them, not by Solo.
Yeah, like, he knows who beat him up.
Yeah, but he is technically owed a North American Championship match because he won that vote. So I guess the idea is that he goes after Solo to get a match, he loses that match, and then he can feud with... Well, I'd say he feud with Carmelo and Trick Williams, but he just spent
a
month ago feuding with Trick Williams. So him just fighting Carmelo is just one step up from that, and it doesn't really seem like it's worth anything. I think the likelihood is that Carmelo Hayes is going up at some point to the main roster, you'd have to imagine. So maybe they have Wesley beat him on the way, like, he's now going to go through the cycle of just losing to some guys they want to push a bit more in NXT on his way up, does the honors for some other people, loses his title. That seems to make the most sense.
I mean, it wouldn't be strange to me if Carmelo Hayes ends up being the next person to beat Bron Breakker. Still.
Yeah,
that's still a bit of a possibility.
So, I'd be all right with that. If they wanted to try to build a new vision of NXT, because you got to build around someone new, and he could be a guy for that.
Let's talk about that, because the episode ends with a little video package talking about, you know, hey, we've had this great year and, you know, whatever, if you want to justify it that way. But they switch over the logo, and the paint splatter logo goes into, it's not the black and gold because it's predominantly white, but the white and black and gold new NXT logo, which is the same font, but it doesn't have the paint splatter anymore. And they've recorded two episodes of NXT, which have used both that logo and a lot of the paint splatter iconography and, like, the little thing that, like, the insert that's put on top of the table for commentary is still, like, the paint splatter one, for instance. I'm assuming, I don't know for sure, so, you know, don't say, like, oh, you know, he confirmed it or whatever. I'm assuming that the reason why they recorded these two episodes was because they want to redo the set and make it, you know, fully in unison with this new gold logo. But I don't know 100% for sure about that. So maybe that ends up not being the case. I am a huge fan of saying, get the fuck out for this paint splatter thing. I really like the theme. So I'd be totally fine with them keeping, I forget what it's called, the down south slang might call it. I don't know. But the Wally song, if I'm remembering correctly, he does it. I like that theme, but I hated the logo. I've hated the paint splatter stuff, so I'm a big fan of this change. How do you guys feel? It's the end of an era.
I thought it was that they were maybe going to show the black and gold logo real quick and then go back to the NXT 2.0. So when I saw a new logo, I got so excited because it's showing that, first of all, they're getting, at the very least, they're getting rid of the 2.0 part of the name, which is good because I don't like having to write NXT 2.0. Silly. The gold and white, it's a great compromise. I saw a lot of discourse about, well, the end of the black and gold era, it sucked. It was too dingy anyway. And I just think that that's silly. Like, was the end of the black and gold era great? No. But come on, you know, look at what they were facing. And the black and gold era was one of the best times that I've had as a wrestling fan. So I'm good with any step that goes back in that direction because that was my favorite show.
Also, I think it's funny that people act like you need to change the logo itself and have the name be 2.0 to have better lighting. You can change nothing about the set except for those little paint splatter elements, and it's still going to be brighter than it was at Full Sail. So,
and that to me is what was weird. I saw people like, yeah, but 2.0 was better, and it was brighter, and it was production was better, and I'm like, okay. It wasn't like, hey, NXT just went into this dark emo phase. They had no one there. They were trying to work with the fact that, okay, cool, what can we do with the fact that we're in a smaller building with not a lot of people? Yeah, it was dark, but it wasn't like the entire time they were in Full Sail, it was this dark and dingy product.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a mix of the two and be perfectly fine.
Calum, you don't care, right?
I care to a degree, but probably in different ways. I mean, this is the full-blown admission that Triple H did hate 2.0, and he's now taking his revenge now that he's the guy in control anymore. This is him saying, him a couple of weeks ago in that Ariel Helwani interview, I said, I like some of the things they did, and I like the direction. Yeah, just like, yeah, but now I'm just going to change everything and take it back to where it was before when I was in control of it. And they haven't gone strictly black and gold. They've seemingly gone white and gold because they have to demonstrate still some form of evolution. Where realistically, if he could, he probably would go back to black and gold if he thought that was something that he could demonstrate without it illustrating some form of regression.
I like the other font better.
For me being a stickler for certain things, I absolutely hate this NXT font. I've been, anytime I use it for anything, when you try to like center the font somewhere, it looks off because the points on the bottom left and the top right just throw the whole center part off. And I mean, I'm not somebody who can talk about design the way that other people can. Like, people, you know, go to school for this stuff and they're artists and they know what the fuck they're talking about. But I would think that this would be one of those things people would go, no, don't do it like that. Do it the opposite way.
I'd say that the aesthetic changes, we'll see how that goes. I think the aesthetic with NXT 2.0 and pretty much for all of WWE's shows is terrible. It's way too bright and it makes it almost disorientating to watch because it's like it's horribly bright. It's way too, like, I don't know, American talent show levels of brightness. it's off putting. Actually, when I was listening to someone talk about this, so I don't know, again, take it with a grain of salt whether it was true or not, but apparently the WWE shows are so bright that it actually impacts the HD of the shows, and it actually makes it appear more pixelated than it should be on screens because it's just way too bright. Yeah, so hopefully they can do something to actually tone it down a little bit and make it a bit darker, because that would be more just visually relaxing. Other than that, I don't know how much will change because they still have the same group of people. The booking of NXT 2.0 has gotten better over the past couple of months, and the performances have been getting better, and they've been getting better people involved. I mean, they've just recouped all of the best people from NXT UK, so that's already enhanced the roster significantly. I would have imagined that, and again, I don't know, you've all read the spoilers for NXT next week, I presume you have anyway, but...
We'll be talking about that in a bit.
Yeah, well, there's one thing that we'll talk about when we get to it. There's someone new and interesting coming in, or vaguely new and interesting coming in, but it doesn't seem like they went with like a huge splash for the first new show of this quote unquote new era, however you want to term it, NXT 3.0, whatever. And but yeah, we'll just wait and see. I am among the people that thinks that reverting back to the black and gold is not necessarily the saving grace that everyone, that a lot of people were suggesting it's going to be, because NXT was on the downturn way before the pandemic. I think at least a year plus before the pandemic, they were already getting really stale, and just it didn't feel like NXT It still felt like the booking was, and this is a thing that applies to a lot of what WWE is showing now, the booking was very competent and logical and it made sense, but there was nothing that really hooked you. It seemed like there was nothing exciting going on. It was just kind of going from month to month, show to show. Things were making sense, but you weren't... I wasn't excited anymore because, okay, we're going to have another feud or thing with Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, or we're going to do something else with... who's Adam Cole going to beat this week? That type of story. It just felt that everything became very formulaic, which is fine, but you do like something to mix it up every now and again. And that's, again, when we talk about just show reviews in general, that's why I'm still a little bit reluctant to talk about how great things have become or how much better things have become with Triple H, because I think that everything has become more competent and that a lot of the absolute worst stuff has completely disappeared. So by proxy, that means it's been getting better. But it's the shows are all really boring.
Like, see, that is kind of where glass half full, glass half empty, depending on the optimism, pessimism spectrum that you lay. I kind of agree with you in a lot of ways about that, but I apply it, I guess, in almost the opposite way, where I think NXT 2.0, I hated. Like, I hate the idea of 2.0. I hate the idea of the paint splatter. I hate the way that they've changed a lot of the characters and all that. But I'm thinking that there might be an opportunity here where maybe Triple H is telling the truth about the idea that he liked some of the things that they changed, and he's going to take the lessons that they've learned and apply it in a way that it's not going to be... This might be a little bit harsh to say, but it's not going to be equally as boring as what that used to be and what AEW became. Because to me, what I don't like about AEW is I feel it's kind of in that same boat as what NXT Black and Gold was towards the end, where, yeah, I mean, good match versus... good person versus good person equals good match, and it might lead to a logical story, but then also sometimes it doesn't lead to a logical story, and then it's just wrestling and wrestling and wrestling. And I know that was a criticism of Black and Gold NXT 2 was, yeah, the wrestlers are good, but it's just wrestling and I don't fucking care. And that's why they made so many more over the top characters here. And then that became, my God, these characters are fucking ridiculous. Like, they overcorrect here and there. And I kind of hope that maybe this white and gold will be kind of a combination of it, more so than just, we're going back to the way they used to be.
I do get what you're saying with that regard. I couldn't disagree with you more about the AEW side of that, but that's your prerogative.
How do you feel about that, Rob? Are you kind of leaning one way or another, or, you know? Usually the middle ground between those opinions.
No, like, I definitely understand what Callum is saying, where he says that towards the end, NXT had already started getting stale. I guess my question would be, when's the last time you were really enthused with the NXT product? Because then we can start to see what happened that maybe made it a little more on the stale side.
It was before the... I'm thinking around about the time that Adam Cole first won the title.
I think what probably made it fail was the lack of call-ups. Yeah, because it literally just became... All right,
it was the same group of people. It was constantly... Yeah. They were, NXT wasn't adding more people, and it wasn't more cycling anything. Out people. It had become like, okay, this is it now. This is your roster. And it wasn't, yeah, and it was like, okay, that was the thing that I enjoyed the most about NXT, because, yeah, you had the long-running feud with Ciampa and Gargano, but then you had things in the past where, okay, Neville was champion for a long time, and then he has a load of great matches, and he helps elevate things, and he gets Sami Zayn over as the new champion, and then he goes up soon afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same with Kevin Owens, and the same with Sami Zayn eventually, and a load of other people. It's like the top guys all got cycled through.
And you're thinking that there should be more of like a 2-year max limit, maybe?
Yeah, kind of something along those lines. And I don't know whether, like, again, some people need more seasoning than others. Some people will be in NXT for several years before they get moved up to that next level. But I think that, like, certain people, I mean, you can say what you want, but Silas Koa is now main roster. He should have been main roster probably 6 months before he did. Kamala Hayes is main roster ready. Or Toxic Attraction are main roster ready for what they want on that side of things.
Brent Breaker
is arguably, yeah, that level. I'd say Tyler Bate is at that level.
Grayson Waller even potentially.
Grayson Waller is definitely at that level, I would say. Look, there's a lot of people in NXT. Alba Fire is at that level. There's a lot of people who have the both wrestling ability or charisma or both. Just any combination they either excel at or they that makes up for any of their shortcomings. And they should all be on the main roster, and we should be seeing the new wave of people looking to step up to become what those people were or are. And that's the worry that I have with Triple H in NXT again, is because if he is treating this like a quote-unquote third brand, then there isn't that compulsion to move people up, because you want... Again, it's the issue about them being on television as mm-hmm. well, is the fact that they need stars on that show to get people to watch it. And so it means that if you move your top names up, the likelihood is that people might not want to watch anymore.
Yeah, see, that's where I'm hoping that basically they've learned that lesson and they've kind of figured out a way around it. Because I want those people to move up too. I agree on that.
I thought NXT 2.0 had a good way of correcting that, which is they were bringing people down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should bring people down every once in a while. Apollo Crews is a bigger deal in NXT than he is on the main roster at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen how these NXT 2.0 audiences react. Basically, anybody. Yeah. Bring Reggie down to NXT and he's going to be like the biggest star, one of the biggest stars in the entire thing, because they, as soon as someone just even touched or sniffed at the main roster, it's like they become gods in NXT.
Right. So if you want to take somebody like a Shanky and put him down in NXT, I don't want him to be...
There's limits.
Well, I'm saying I don't want Shanky to be, you know, the next NXT champion, but a guy like Shanky who doesn't get a reaction on the main roster, he pops up on NXT, they're going to pop just because he's a main roster guy. And then it's going to seem like, oh, look at that, Shanky. We're talking about Shanky for a week. But if you take somebody who actually really knows what they're doing... Like how Dolph Ziggler had popped up there for a little bit. That was a really good boost to the Braun Breaker character and everything. So maybe somebody like a Mustafa Ali would be a great fit for NXT. And then you can cycle in somebody like a Braun Breaker and be like, you know what? You move up. You get a chance to freshen things up. Ali can go down, or Chad Gable or Akira Tozawa, like whatever you want to do. And then they can work with the guys like Mustafa Ali against Grayson Waller or whatnot.
I don't think they're ever going to try to do the third brand thing again.
Probably not.
I do think that they like the idea of it being an alternative. And I think that's the long-term goal for the Europe and the India side of it, where you can, like, this is our developmental, but this is also, hey, if you need a break from Raw and SmackDown, maybe this can be your cup of tea. I think... I agree with what both of you guys are saying. I just want to see more cycling in of the kind of programming that we saw with Black and Gold, because some of these characters have just been atrocious. You know, I think having Kiana James be a phony accountant is probably worse than if she was just girl who wants to be champion. Is that bland? Absolutely. But, you know, maybe being too gimmicky is too far of an overreach. I'm hoping they can find the nice balance, because I loved NXT before they went to 2 hours. Before they went to USA, before they did anything with like Survivor Series and stuff, that was my favorite thing to watch. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to get back to some kind of that energy.
Yeah, when you're talking about like going overboard with these characters, I think a good mix for my tastes at the very least. Like I hate, for instance, the Kiana James character right now. I think that's really just dumb. But I do like Thea Hale as being like, hey, I just graduated high school and I'm going to go off to university. Which college am I going to go to? Chase University. And then she's like, the peppy super school spirited type of person for this little insider training school that's in there. And then I don't like when characters are bland. Like, I haven't seen anything from Malik Blade that's made me think that he is worth an investment because he's just guy. But then other people can just be guy. And I'm like, okay, they don't need a character. Like, Charlie Dempsey doesn't really need a character beyond you're William Regal's kid and you can wrestle. And he's way more engaging than Malik Blade is. And then you got Ikemanjaro, who wrestles in his jacket. And I'm like, okay, fine. That's okay. And Duke Hudson's tried 6 different things and they've all failed. So I'm hoping that they kind of lean more towards the successful ones like the Tony D'Angelo's and lean a little bit away from... I'm already down on Saul Rocca. I hate the name, and it's like, I'm Saul Rocca. I am a blonde who surfs. Okay, I don't really care. Yeah. Before we get into the spoilers side of things, we'll talk about one more thing that's changing in NXT, or at least supposedly changing. We don't have any confirmation yet. And then we'll get into spoilers. But it seems like they might go back to the TakeOver name. And I am of two opinions about it. I don't want Halloween Havoc to be NXT TakeOver Halloween Havoc. But I do want them to have TakeOver in that availability where if they decided to do, I said this in a group chat, I think if NXT goes on a live tour, they should call it the TakeOver Tour. The same way that they used to have the Heatwave Tour or the New Year's Revolution Tour or the Road to WrestleMania Tour. Call it TakeOver. And that way you can say if they go to like Michigan, that it's NXT TakeOver Michigan, and we're going to be on these dates on this thing, book your tickets today. Don't call it NXT TakeOver In Your House.
Yeah, I think 100% a mental thing, and back to TakeOver.
You're going to need to repeat yourself, Rob. Can't hear you.
Oh.
You're bouncing in and out very low.
How about now?
Keep talking. We'll see.
I think that the TakeOver name, it's very much a mental thing. It's very much, hey, let's try to pacify some people. Let them know that it's going to be okay because we're bringing back TakeOver and there's black and gold in the logo. And you see, we're getting back to what you originally liked. So I think that the TakeOver name is necessary. And again, if they can capture the same magic, that's fantastic. You know what I mean? Like, I would love to be excited about NXT TakeOvers again. I would love for NXT TakeOvers to be a regular Big Four weekend thing again. You know?
You mean like NXT TakeOver on the Wednesday prior to Mania or something?
Yeah, like on the Saturday before Survivor Series, NXT TakeOver War Games, or on the Saturday before SummerSlam, you do NXT TakeOver 35 or whatever.
I'm not
that anymore.
Yeah, I'm not super into that at this point, since they, especially with the two nights of WrestleMania.
Well, and the thing is, they do all their main events on Saturdays now, so it would always be the Sunday afterwards.
On the Sunday, whatever.
Yeah, this is just, as Rob says, it's just as a means of reassuring people and providing some sort of cheap pop. Again, there's some really just quick and easy wins that Triple H can get, and he's going to milk them for all it's worth among the core audience that didn't like what NXT 2.0 stood for. And so you can just add the TakeOver name, bring back some black and gold coloring and stuff like that, and then it just feels like, okay, this is already infinitely better, even if the product stays exactly the same.
And that's exactly what he's doing in every way.
Perception is everything.
Mm-hmm. He's saying wrestling like 5 times at every show just to be like, yeah. Oh, you see? You see? Isn't it great? And credit to him. I do it too. Shit.
I noticed on the, it was the second week, I think, after Triple H took charge. Might have even been the first week. I think it was the second, though, that they had specifically said somebody was taken to a hospital on Raw. And I was like, oh, they said hospital.
See, it works on you too. You're just as much of a sheep.
It's so ridiculous that we're in a position where that ends up being like the bare minimum is, oh my God, this is great. But we will talk about NXT spoilers from the next 2 weeks at this point. Now, if you do not want to know what happens on these two things, then on the audio only thing, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how long we're going to talk. So, you know, skip forward until you stop hearing the word NXT, I guess. But if you're on the YouTube side of things, then we're going to have this like regular graphic up of the hot tags that you see right now. And I will come back after the NXT spoilers to a Manscaped ad. So wait until you see the Manscaped ad, you know, skip forward until you see that, and then you'll know when we're done. So just in case you don't want to know, here are the spoilers for the next 2 weeks of NXT, which I am assuming, of course, are those transition weeks before we get into the full white and gold. Everything's been changed up around to that. So I think it was Callum had said a minute ago, it doesn't seem like they've done anything super crazy. Super crazy has not popped up on this show, by the way. I do think that this is kind of not the relaunch, basically. You know what I mean? That it's sort of, okay, we got these 2 weeks, and then when we come back on October, whenever that is, what's that next episode? October 4th, that'll be like the, okay, now we're going to do something. But we did get some interesting things on this, and we'll run down the, you know, the positives and the negatives and all that. We know that Nathan Fraser beats Axiom to tie up their best of three series. Toxic Attraction beats Ivy Nile and Tatum Paxley, seemingly potentially a number one contenders match. Might not be. I don't know. Schism has a promo. The Dyad beats Idris Onofe and Malik Blade. I already pretty much saw that coming. Core Jade beats Wendy Chu, and then Lash Legend attacks Wendy Chu after the match. Chase University beats Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. That, I think, is interesting.
Okay.
I don't know if it's like it comes about because like Wesley screws Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams or something, or if it ends up being just, look, we're down on Hayes and Williams for a little bit and they'll come back up, but they lose. So, Oliver Carter is now in NXT, and they did say that, you know, we had a little vignette about him coming to NXT. He is now Ouro Mensa. That's the new trademark that they did right before they announced that this was that. So what's cool about that is that that means that those people that have been lingering in that, like that zone of, are they released or are they not? It seems like probably they are still with the company. I like the name. I'm down for it. How do you guys feel about it?
I legitimately had to do the article twice because I couldn't tell you the difference between Ashton Smith and Oliver Carter. So I like the name. I'm glad he's with the company. I hope he does something. I couldn't tell you anything about him.
He's better than Ashton Smith.
I haven't seen enough of Oliver Carter to know how good he is, but I'm always happy someone has managed to keep their job.
What do you guys think about the name itself? Ouro Mensa.
Fine. Stupid. Every name. like half the names they put together is like, what's Ouro? Why not call him Oreo Mensa if you're going to go that far?
Trademark. I think it's better than an Oliver Carter. That's a little bland for me. At least this seems like it's going more to tap into his culture and whatever. But an even bigger deal, after JD McDonagh beats Tyler Bate, we get the return of Ilya Dragunov popping up in NXT. And to jump ahead to what happens with the 27th results, he cuts a promo about how he had to vacate that NXT UK championship because of his injury. And when JD McDonagh interrupts and Bron Breakker comes out, whatever, we got a triple threat going for the NXT championship for Halloween Havoc. Dragunov is here.
Yeah, we do. I love Dragunov. He's fantastic.
Yeah. Great to have him on the main roster or NXT, because it's just like he was, well, the last, he never lost the NXT UK title, so he arguably has a legitimate claim for the title because that's what Bron Breakker holds now, in the fact that it's subsumed into the NXT championship. And yeah, he's one of the best wrestlers they have, so I'm glad that he's now going to get that exposure.
You guys think that they are putting JD McDonagh in here just so he can take the loss and Dragunov doesn't lose but doesn't win?
Probably.
I'd hope so.
That's kind of where I'm going. I'm like, all right, I don't know why that we can back.
Fuck it. I love Dragunov. Let him you want to take it back to the takeover days, let Dragunov carry the thing for a little bit.
I wouldn't be opposed to Dragunov coming out of here as the winner, and then Braun Breaker coming up to the main roster soon after that. I'd be down for it. Dragunov is fun as hell to watch. I don't think it's happening, though. We'll get around to it when we come to Halloween Havoc predictions, but other things, Gacy beats Grimes, so maybe that doesn't happen at Halloween Havoc. I don't know. Maybe they follow it up with some kind of gimmick match or something. I kind of assume Gacy will be involved in, like, a, you know, that's a scares and something match, scares and chairs, or whatever the fuck they want to call these things. Sol Ruka beats Amari Miller. Amari Miller is firmly in that jobber position on this roster. Caden Carter loses to Nikita Lyons. Damon Kemp beats Brutus Creed. Although, oddly, they apparently re-recorded that and did a thing where Kemp ended up using a steel chair on Brutus, and then he called out Julius. So, I don't know if he's going to beat him or if it's going to be a no contest or DQ or whatever. Basically, Damon Kemp comes out on top. It's the same sort of deal. And Wesley beats Tony D'Angelo, but by referee stoppage, because D'Angelo seemingly has some sort of an injury coming out of this.
Concerning.
And I don't know exactly what injury, but I am assuming it's a concussion based off of the little bit of information that's come out about it.
So, yeah, it says that Tony was sent into the turnbuckles and then he went down afterwards. So that could be multiple things. I mean, concussion is definitely a possibility. It could be a stinger.
Mm-hmm.
It could be just whiplash. And they're just being overly cautious about it, and you definitely, in all circumstances, should be overly cautious. But yeah, it's definitely not good to see a guy go down, especially when he's far exceeding his what you would expect someone with the limited amount of matches that he's had so far would be. So I'd hate to see that momentum get curtailed for long.
Yeah, so more information about that when it comes out. And Mandy Rose beats Fallon Henley. It seems like they are going with Mandy Rose against Alba Fire for Halloween Havoc, but that's not yet been confirmed because it hasn't aired. So we'll see what that's the case. Dragunov beats Zion Quinn, and then Brooks and Briggs beat Wolfgang and Mark Coffey in a pub rules match, which is kind of fun. The idea that it's like, you know, the Gallus boys with their like a pub brawl kind of attitude, and then you got Jensen and Briggs with their own, you know, United States version of a pub brawl. I like that idea behind that. I think that's kind of fun. Anything stand out on these NXT things you guys want to talk about that we had not already?
I mean, nothing that I haven't talked about. I'm just, again, just confused about why Gallus are losing all the time.
Yeah. And I like the idea of a pub brawl. But they're probably losing because Sean wants them to put people over. Because he knows how good they are, and when he needs a reliable champion at the top, he'll go with Gallus.
Yeah, I still think that they should have won the titles instead of Pretty Deadly. But we'll see. Yeah, that's NXT stuff. So, as I said before, we are going to transition over to other things. But in case anybody was curious about not jumping into those things, let's talk about our sponsors for this episode, Manscaped. Now, I am currently rocking my latest order of my deodorant because I needed to pick that up, and that's great. So I'm smelling great, and I hope that you do too, because we're in fresh ball fall, and we got lots of products over on Manscaped for you to pick up. And when you do, use that promo code SMARK, S-M-A-R-K, just like I did, to get your 20% off and free shipping on anything that you pick up on the site, whether it is something like the tools for your family jewels that we've got with a shears kit, or it's something like the lawnmower or the weed whacker, all fantastic tools that I've used many, many times at this point. And I can state for a fact that I've not gotten cut by any of them. So if you do, you're doing something wrong. I don't know what wrong with you, but you got the crop gels and the crop exfoliators and everything that goes along with that. And we are also in the range right now where people are going back to school. And if you got a smelly teenager at home, you want to give them some of these products because they reek, I'm sure. And you want to make sure that this hot weather is not affecting them, that they're smelling good. They're not getting picked on in school. Tell them they pick up something on Manscaped. Promo code SMARK, S-M-A-R-K, free shipping and 20% off. Buy them all the products and make sure that you don't have an embarrassment in your household. All right. So
weed whacker this morning.
Yeah, there you go.
They always do great stuff. Use the deodorant every day. Smells great, as Tony knows, because his wife keeps stealing his.
Yeah, she does. That's why I had to order that one, because I'm just like, my God, you're whittling this down more than I am. But, yeah. So thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring us. Thank you to anybody who picks up any kind of our products over here. Let us know what you think about anything. And, you know, carry on here. Talk about the rest of the hot tags that we've got. We'll go back to Monday Night Raw. Talk about that. Anything that happened on that show that we really want to kind of circle back around to a little bit from all this NXT discussion. One of them being, we have new women's tag team champions. Dakota Kai and Io Sky of Damage Control have beaten Aaliyah and Raquel Rodriguez, making it 3-4-3. If Raquel wins a tag team title with you, fucking don't even bother putting your side plate on it, because you are losing it immediately. She lost one of them later that night, one of them a few days later, and the other one a few days later. Why is this a thing?
She shouldn't be in tag teams. She should be a single.
And yet, it keeps happening. They want her to be a tag team champion on paper and to not actually hold those titles. Was it just like a swerve for the sake of the swerve, you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the reason why. I think that they're not exactly it's more coincidence rather than correlation. I know it's usually the case, like 2 times it's coincidence, 3 times it's correlation. But I think that in these instances, her winning it, the tag team titles the first time, was just to give, because when Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez at the time got together, there weren't any women's tag team titles, and it was kind of like, there, okay, here's your little reward thing for being a team for so long, and to help Raquel in her build up to become NXT Women's Champion, to just give her something straight away, and then to have a nice little surprise by having the other team win the titles afterwards. The other time was because they wanted to do something cool with Dakota Kai. So, and like, they do the reuniting of those two and winning the titles. So it made sense to do it then, and they lost it straight away because they wanted to bring Raquel up to the main roster. So again, that makes sense. And they were very close to releasing Dakota Kai. This time, I think they just put the belts on Raquel and Aaliyah because they knew that everyone thought that EO and Dakota were going to win. So decided, okay, we'll use this one opportunity to help build up Raquel a little bit more, give her her first title on the main roster, because eventually we're going to be pushing her towards the main titles. And yeah, and then just like almost give Aaliyah a gold watch for being in the company for so long and not achieving nothing.
She's got the record for shortest SmackDown match or something, right?
Yeah.
Shortest match ever.
And then, they decide to just give it to this people that should have been the champions at the very first instance, which was EO and Dakota. But it's kind of, okay, they're taking a slight detour to get here, but at least they've reached this point now. And I don't think it was worth it in the grand scheme of things, but that's their prerogative to have made that early decision.
Look, they should have won from the get-go. I am mad at it, though, because it worked. People were talking, and they built it up for a couple more weeks. So this works. Good storytelling. I'm a big proponent these days of not every title reign needs to be 6 months to a year. I'm perfectly fine with transitional champions and a little bit of hot potato action with the belts.
Depends on what you put on the potato, in my mind. If you got some chives and some butter and some cheese, then I'm down for it. A lot of Dominic Mysterio on this episode. Not really my favorite part. Right. Yeah.
He got his fucking ass handed to him. What did they accomplish with Dominic Mysterio?
Well, I guess that leads to the wider question. What do they hope to accomplish with Dominic Mysterio?
Mm-hmm.
Because he has no charisma. He has minimal, he's competent, but absolutely not stand out as a wrestler. He has his last name. That's kind of the most important thing about him, is what his last name is. Do you think if he was called anything else, he would be in WWE?
No.
Exactly.
I'm not going to say no. We got Big Body Javi on NXT.
Well, yeah, but okay, would Dominic be in the kind of lower mid card reaches of NXT right now?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So that's the issue, is the fact that they're trying to push a guy who wasn't ready for the position that he was brought up to in the first place, and is now so not in the position to be pushed as even the fourth guy in a stable that you apparently want to get behind. Like, he doesn't have the ability to do it. And all this is having to lead up to is the eventual match between Dominic and Ray, and that's kind of it, really. Once you hit that point, he's pretty much just the fall guy for Judgment Day until they decide to kick him out of the group.
I'll say this. I think that the match was a bit ass backwards in the storytelling, because Edge just beat the fuck out of him.
Oh no, I think the match made total sense. It's the fact that Edge is by miles a superior wrestler to Dominic Mysterio. He should have kicked his ass from King Come, and Dominic should only have ever really got an offense in when Judgment Day got involved to cause some interference or distraction, because Dominic's not good enough to beat Edge.
That is what they did, so it's logical, but I kind of look at it as, all right, you had him join the group, you had him slick back his hair so his mullet doesn't look as bad. Then he gets in there and he's got the same ass gear that he's had since the match with Rollins, and Edge just beat the crap out of him. So it just sort of looked like, okay, he's Rhea's puppy. But even that, they're not even going full tilt with that like I wanted them to. Like, if he's going to do all these things because he's into Rhea and Rhea is poisoning his mind, you're not even showing any kind of relationship there, regardless of whatever it may be. She's just watching him get his ass kicked and she's like, hey, go remind them that you're Dominic Mysterio. It's like, no, that's not working. It's not working because he's Dominic Mysterio. Do something else with him. And then they get the DQ finish. And Dominic stands tall because of a chair, which is fine. But at some point, they're going to need to do something with him. Level this dude up.
I'm also disappointed that they did this injury angle with Edge, because I'm like, man, when he comes back, are they going to do the whole thing where he has to have another match with this? I'm fucking over it. I don't want Edge against Judgment Day anymore.
Well, this is the ongoing issue with Edge, the fact that he is on a limited schedule. So if you do enter him into a bit more of a long-term program, he does have to suffer an injury angle and move on. My belief is that this is going to write him out until the Royal Rumble.
I think so too.
And he'll just come back in the Royal Rumble. He'll do that, and he'll get eliminated by someone in the Royal Rumble, and that'll be what his feud leading up to WrestleMania will be. I think he's done with Judgment Day for now.
I could see him coming back for Crown Jewel, because we do have a history of seeing people come back for Crown Jewel, and right now it's like, who do they really have that they can make a big thing for that? Possibly their game plan is to just do Logan Paul versus Roman Reigns. Seems like they're heading in that direction. I don't know. We'll see what happens on SmackDown tonight, but maybe he comes back from that.
Survivor Series too, because he's one of those guys who, if you give him something to sink his teeth into, he'll be into it. And if it's got to be like the brand warfare stuff, he's one of the few in his generation that was able to do any of that successfully. I can see him back for Survivor Series. I do hope this is the end of Judgment Day, and the one thing that we didn't get is a fucking singles match between him and Finn Balor.
That didn't happen at all. I thought it did.
No.
I care so little that I'm like, whatever. What else happened on here? Johnny Gargano against Chad Gable. Fun match. Got Kevin Owens taking a fight to Austin Theory. Good promo.
Another great promo. Dexter Lumis and Kevin Owens are just Triple H's pets. And he's just having them go out there to do very specific things. Get the same kind of reaction every week, but Owens is knocking it out of the park.
And we had Sonya Deville popping up at random to lose to Bianca Belair for a whole thing.
Did we talk about this already on the air? That Sonya just hasn't been as good in the ring lately?
Yeah, I think we talked about it on the last episode or something. I don't know. We might have. But yeah, she doesn't even have a roster yet. They still haven't decided on if she's Raw or SmackDown. Isn't that strange?
I mean, she's most definitively been appearing on SmackDown recently.
But... more of her appearances have been on SmackDown, but she's still listed as a non-branded wrestler on the website, and she's, you know, just popping up on Raw to challenge Bianca like that.
Yeah, I think it's just over-challenging, and again, they don't really pay too much attention to the rigid lines between brands anymore, so yeah, they just wanted someone for Bianca to defend her championship against, and yeah, decided to use her, and it's just all building up towards the match with Bayley at Extreme Rules.
Really hope that they give them some kind of a gimmick that's worthwhile. I don't want to see some
match they were supposed to fucking do 12 months ago. Or whatever.
There you go, do that one. Yeah,
that's probably what they're going to do.
Or they milk it and they do the typical, it's just Extreme Rules, and then, you know, whatever.
Well, I think whatever it is, it needs to be a match that involves a pinfall. Because I think the match they were supposed to have was Last Woman Standing, right?
Oh, no, it was an I Quit.
I Quit. Okay, in which case it doesn't work. Like, the whole story is built around the fact that Bayley is the first person to, the fact that, Bayley was the first person to pin her in 300 plus days, so the story should be around she needs to pin her again. So it needs to be a match that can end by a pinfall.
Regular match at Extreme Rules, and then we go carry it on, and that's
what
we don't know yet. I mean, Triple H might have totally different booking philosophies.
It could be, again, the Extreme Rules thing. It could be Falls Count Anywhere. As long as it's something that can end via pinfall submission, I think that kind of fits the story they're telling. Or they could just go completely off piste. It's completely up to them. But I think that's the logical progression they should take.
Kendo's stuck in a poll, it is.
Yeah, Bayley's great at those matches.
Let's round things out by talking about some AEW talk and leading up from Dynamite and Rampage and everything into what we're going to be getting next week for Grand Slam. Next week's Grand Slam, right? Yeah. Totally losing track of which day today is at this point. Like, today's Wednesday? No, okay. So Jon Moxley defeated Sammy Guevara, and Bryan Danielson beat Chris Jericho, so we're getting Danielson against Moxley at Grand Slam, which we were talking about before. That should be pretty damn fun.
Another banger for Moxley, another banger for Danielson.
Yeah, it's just that, both of these matches were really good. I mean, the Moxley-Guevara match was a bit, it was still a good match, but it's a bit like foregone conclusion, really. You didn't have as much investment into it because you knew that Moxley was going to win. Jericho and Danielson was a bit more up in the air, and I thought Danielson was, again, just fantastic in this match. Jericho was also great, because these three are just the guys now. They're like the people that you always turn to have a good match in AEW. And so they had another great match, and I felt that... Should we do some predictions? Well,
I think so.
Talk about it. So... I've kind of like booked almost everything in my head about surrounding not just this, but just going forward what I want with MJF involved in this title situation as well. So here's my pitch, and this is what I would do if I was Tony Khan, and Tony Khan could do whatever he wants, and he usually does a good job, so we'll see what happens. But I would have Danielson beat Moxley, and I'd have it just be like a clean, no interference, no involvement. Like, Danielson just beats Moxley, because they've been telling the story of Danielson that everyone he's beaten so far is someone that he's never beaten before in a one-on-one match. Because he beat Hangman after he'd either lost or drew his matches with Hangman. He'd never beaten Chris Jericho until that match on Wednesday. So they could do the story of, okay, they lost the only match he's had with Moxley in AEW, he lost, and so he could beat Moxley, and so he's overcome basically everyone that he's lost to so far in AEW. The advantage of that is it's a fresh match with MJF when they eventually get round to it. But what I would do is have like a big celebration, have all of Blackpool Combat Club appear. They like celebrate with Danielson. Moxley shakes his hand, gives him a hug, whatever. Moxley then decides to kind of leave to go up the ramp, go on his vacation, kind of let Danielson enjoy the moment with the title, have all the spotlight himself, and you have MJF run out from the stage and push Moxley off the stage to, and then just like giant like explosions or whatever, just to get thrown into like a production area, which just like it feels like he's just been like electrocuted and it goes off and it's like all the pyro and all the stuff just goes off.
Hopefully crazy. Much better than that exploding death match.
Yeah. You would hope so. But then you like MJF just scarp as he just runs away, and the whole end of the show is based around like everyone just checking out on Moxley to see how if he's okay. And it kind of ruins Danielson's moment a little bit, but it's like the idea that Moxley's in serious trouble. That writes Moxley out for a while. It adds a bit of personal animosity between Danielson and MJF. Like Danielson is baiting MJF to use his poker chip on him. Like, take the title off of me. Come on, see if you can do it. You have MJF eventually beat Danielson. He holds the title for a long time. And then you leave Moxley out.
Are you saying that you want Moxley or MJF to win the title on Grand Slam, or wait a little bit?
Wait until Full Gear. Because I think it's a match that, because I know, again, a lot of people were speculating about this as well. I even saw like a poll that someone put in the triple threat. It's like people don't know whether MJF can cash in his chip immediately or not. We don't know whether it's a Money in the Bank thing, even though that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
But every time they have used the chip in the past, it's always been you say you're going to do it, and it's for a match further down the line.
Yeah, it's precedent versus implication for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't know. So I'm going with the mindset of that he has to essentially call his shot, and then it's booked. So I would have the MJF Danielson match to be the main event of Full Gear, because I think that's a match that people will pay to see. I don't think you should just give it away in like the first instance, even if it was like a cash in. You could do that, and that's another route you could take for Grand Slam. I think that's probably what some people, maybe one of you two, will predict. But that's what I would do. And then you have Moxley written out until at least Revolution. I would personally extend it out to Double or Nothing, but it's whether you think that you can have Moxley away for that long. But you have Moxley come back, and he's the guy that eventually takes the title off MJF. You could even tell a long-term story. You wouldn't have MJF or Moxley out this long, but you could tell the story of MJF is essentially waiting out his contract, and it's the bidding war of 2024. So you could tell the story that his contract expires January 1st, 2024. And you can almost tell it of like the idea that Moxley beats him at the very last moment to win the title. Because Moxley's kind of like the guy in AEW. He's like AEW's savior at this point. So he could be the guy that saves AEW from losing the world title to WWE when MJF's contract expires. So you could tell that story. But I think that you should tell a story that writes Moxley off for a few months, has MJF eventually win the title. But I would personally like to see this match end clean, and not end with MJF just immediately cashing in on Danielson and winning the title.
Where are you thinking that they're going in this, Rob?
I do kind of lean towards maybe he just cashes in. But they've also set up a weird story with the firm where you won't see them again until MJF needs them. So maybe they're saving that for whenever they want the firm to jump Danielson. I do think he beat Danielson for it. I think the idea of MJF holding the title till his contract expires is a great one, except for the fact that I don't want the world title locked up that long. You know, I like the idea in theory. Like, if I'm writing a story, that's the story I would absolutely write. But in practice, I don't know how well that'll go over, because we've never actually seen MJF do anything for an extended period of time. He sort of has these one-off rivalries, and then it's kind of wash, rinse, repeat. You know, we've never seen MJF wrestle on like 3 Dynamites in a row, I don't think. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him.
I think that almost makes him like a perfect world champion, because it almost tells like the best story that you could have with him, which is essentially he just, not just like a prize fighter, but he only fights when it's necessary. And you say what we want about AEW. AEW has realistically only had fighting champions. maybe you stretch back to Jericho at the very first one because he had a group surrounding him. But we haven't had a classic heel, not cowardly, but conniving champion. Like, Kenny Omega was a heel champion, but he pretty much, his whole character is built around the fact that he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. So he would out-wrestle people and still win matches. MJF can be sly about things. He can win by technicalities. He can stretch it out to the fact that he doesn't wrestle. He only wrestles once a month, and that's to defend the title. And then all the rest of the time, he just stays out of the limelight. Well, not stays out of the limelight. He stays in the limelight, but he stays out of the ring. He brings in the cronies of the firm to fight his battles for him. He brings back Sean Spears to do stuff on his behalf. You can just tell a completely different story with him as champion, as a guy who will take every single shortcut and will stretch every rule and possibility in order to keep the title. And I think that's something that's different enough and unique enough for AEW that it will drive interest as for him as champion. I don't think they need a champion that is going to fight every single week, as long as he's on TV every single week. And we know what MJF does when he's on TV. He cuts great promos, and that's the real key to MJF. He's a fantastic wrestler, but it's his promos that get people watching.
I think we're going to start Grand Slam with the Acclaimed winning the titles. And I think we're going to go through whatever the other matches are. I mean, I don't remember offhand. Let me double check. So there's a four-way for the women's title. Deeb, Athena, Baker, and Storm. I'm assuming Storm retains. I know Orange Cassidy's going after Pac for the All-Atlantic title. Pac's going to just retain that, I think.
Cassidy's winning.
You think they're going to do that because of the double champion thing?
No, I think they're going to do that because Ethan Page has said that he wants to be champion. And he's telling a very straight story of, damn it, does anyone take this industry seriously? And who better to come up against than Orange Cassidy?
I'm just assuming Ethan Page goes up against Pac. But I think that by the end of this whole thing with Mox and Danielson, I'm currently leaning towards that they don't have MJF cash in. But I don't know if I would go that way or the other way. It kind of depends on what they plan on doing in the future, because I do think that MJF Danielson is a little bit more fun than MJF Moxley, but it's very, very heavy-handed Moxley versus MJF going forward. So I'm going to say Danielson wins the title if they go with Moxley wants to take time off. But I'm currently leaning more towards Moxley wins the title and there's no cash in, and we just do Moxley MJF at Full Gear.
I'd be all right with anything, really.
It's got Steiner in here.
Yes. But, AEW is rebounding nicely. There's still so much to be determined, you know?
Yeah.
Are you guys more excited about Grand Slam now after watching Dynamite, or are you kind of in the same boat, or even potentially less?
I'm excited for every AEW show, pretty much. So, and Grand Slam last year was like a fantastic show, and I don't see any reason why this one won't live up to those expectations again. At least the main event is going to be a great match, so that already ticks a lot of the boxes.
I'm a little bit more excited than I was after Dynamite. I mean, still like expecting it to be pretty good, but more so now, I guess even the Acclaimed thing has me more excited.
Oh yeah, I mean that's a big deal as well.
That's gonna be such a fun moment for the crowd.
Yeah.
They've built up with, so there's four title matches on Dynamite. So got Pac and Orange Cassidy, which I agree with Rob, there's a very real possibility that Orange Cassidy wins the title here. Just because they are doing that story with Ethan Page. And Pac's held the title for a while. Again, he hasn't exactly defended it very frequently on AEW, but he has held the title for a while. And Orange Cassidy hasn't won anything yet. It would be good for him to hold a title at some point.
You know, I'm down for the idea of Orange Cassidy winning a championship.
Yeah. We're almost certainly going to see the Acclaim win the titles, because they probably should have done it in retrospect at All Out. But hopefully with a hot New York crowd behind them, they will be able to capture that same, at least emulate that level of momentum or that level of crowd reaction when they do hold the titles. Tony Storm, Serena Deeb, Athena, and Britt Baker. I think it's weird it's a fatal four-way. It should be just Tony Storm against Serena Deeb.
I'd be more down for that, yeah.
Because that was the story they told. I mean, the story they told is just like everyone got involved. And realistically, the person who made the biggest impact in that entire women's segment was Jamie Hayter, and she's not involved in this match. But the what happened was that Serena Deeb forced Tony Storm to... Or did a pin her or tap her out? I can't remember actually off the top of my head. But either way, Serena Deeb beat Tony Storm, so she should be the one getting the title shot. I don't know. Athena doesn't merit it because she just lost her last title match.
Yeah.
And Britt Baker shouldn't be in it because she lost her last title match as well, and she didn't win.
More women on the card.
And because it's like, for fuck's sake, oh my god, how many times are Storm and Baker going to go against each other?
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, but it's just like, it's another fatal four-way. We just had a fatal four-way. So, yeah. as per usual, I'm not exactly enthralled about the women's stuff on these shows, but that's kind of, that's par for the course now.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll be talking about that when it happens. That's their show for Dynamite Rampage next week. And, you know, we'll break that down. We'll break out all the other things that happen on SmackDown tonight, everything on the next episode of the Hot Tags as well. The main event for the next podcast here on SmackDown Moment is going to be following up with what we did earlier. Now, if you're interested in more AEW talk and you want us to, you know, you want to hear what we have to say about like ranking the roster, we did the AEW men's and women's roster tier list the past few days. So we got the WWE one that we're going to carry on this with. So we are going to do most likely probably either Tuesday, Wednesday, or Wednesday, Thursday, or something. We haven't quite figured it out yet, but you're going to get two videos next week, one of them for the women's roster in WWE, one of them for the men's roster, and we're going to carry back along with the hot tags. Currently, right now, which might change, the end of the month is another blank week that we are thinking about possibly doing some sort of a review of Heroes of Wrestling from October 1999, one of these atrocious shows that have happened in the past. It'll be an episode of Miss This Mark, but we might have things change in the meantime. You know, you'll be stay tuned and find out when we find out. And then we start getting into Extreme Rules and Halloween Havoc and everything that goes along with that. But we've got that end of the year run going on right now, so not many more opportunities to fill in those spots for those blank weeks, but as always, I want to know what your thoughts are on things you'd like to see going forward. So if you are hankering for some particular type of podcast, let me know. And then we can factor that in and try to get around to that in some fashion. We, of course, always have the pick your poison option, where if you want to make sure that we do something, then you can directly sponsor that. And keep all that in mind, of course, with any of the support that you guys give to us. It's going to help out not just for that, but also for fanboysanonymous.com. Go to fanboysanonymous.com, obviously, to follow and like and share and favorite all those things. Subscribe to that YouTube channel and so on and so forth. And go to amangotree.com and see all those lists and links and everything that I got going on there. And follow me at Tony Mango for whatever I decide to randomly tweet and such. Make sure that you're following these guys as well, though, too. Rob?
Yeah, you can follow me everywhere at Dude Felice. You can check out Fightful.com and Fightful Select. Make sure to check out the eventual DudeFelice.com. Make sure to check out all the cool features on SmarkOutMoment.com, including the Triple Threat, which I will be contributing to every week moving forward. And here's Callum.
You can find me on Twitter at WeekWeister14. Over on the SmarkOut website as well is where you'll find the power rankings every single Saturday. That's my contribution to the website, so make sure you're following that along. And you can also find the Fantasy League. You can also check out www.fantasyleague.com. It will lead you straight there as well. And yeah, you can see all the latest standings. He's been picking up points, which wrestlers are contributing the most to each of our teams as we head towards kind of the we're closing in on the midpoint of the season. It kind of feels like a lot more. It's been a lot longer than that, but that's just the way that wrestling works nowadays. It's just, especially this year, like 1 month feels like 10. So.
God, you're fucking right about that.
But yeah, follow all that stuff along, and yeah, that's it from me, and we'll see what we're up to next week. More tier lists and stuff.
Simultaneously, this year has felt like it's gone on forever, and then at the same time, I'm looking at my list, and I'm like, man, we only have, like, you know, we're episode 563 right now. The end of the year awards is episode 577. Like, we only have 11 episodes, or not 11, that's not the right math. 14 episodes left before we are at the end of the year awards. Goddamn, that seems like it's crazy. And then I also go, hey, Big E was world champion heading into this year. And I'm like, oh, fuck, that's right. Yeah. So much to unpack by the end of the year, but a couple more months in the meantime for us to have some hopefully awesome stuff and hopefully some awesome podcasts for you to listen to as well. So thank you for listening to this one, and we hope to see you next time. But for now, this has been another Smark Out moment, and we are being counted out.